Episode 26 of the podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards, definitely the best mouthguard I've ever had. Head on over to their website, sisuguard.com, and use the promo code FNP10 at checkout for 10% off your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
All right, Tuesday, July 10th, episode 26 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. You might have seen that new video there on Twitter. We're going live on YouTube here soon. Another couple great interviews for you, so let's get right into it. Episode 26 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. The end of every episode, I end it. I mean, I'm more excited than when I finished the episode before that. I keep getting so excited about this. You know, there's so many great things going on with Fight Night Picks. Like I said, you saw the video on Twitter. We're going to be live on YouTube coming up here soon. We're going to start the video podcast, vlogs, you name it. I've got it. So I'm going to be at, you know, the FA7 Legends card coming up here soon in St. John in August. I'm going to be at NEF35, so we're going to add a video component to that. You're going to see me more on Periscope as well, so get ready for that. And like I said, a couple more great interviews. So we've got former UFC featherweight, women's featherweight title challenger Tanya Evinger coming on to give us an interview. You know, Tanya and I, we talked about what it was like to fight against Cyborg, what it's like to fight in bigger, you know, title events. She had a dominant reign in Invicta, and we were supposed to see her fight this past winter against Marion Renault, but the fight was canceled due to injury. So we're asking her, you know, how she's feeling and whatnot. So a great interview with Tanya. We've also got Ty O'Keefe from Fansided Sports Illustrated, as well as the Fight Network. We've had him on here before. It's a pleasure to have him on as a guest, one of the most knowledgeable journalists out there. And Ty and I are going to break down UFC 226, The Ultimate Fighter Season 27, and we're going to give our takes on probably the biggest storyline that came out of this weekend and almost overshadowed DC's champ bid. DC, obviously, as you probably all know, beat Stipe, but Daniel Cormier is going to fight Brock Lesnar most likely. And it's come out that the fight, I think it's January 8th. After January 8th, Brock Lesnar can fight. So we'll probably see Brock Lesnar fighting for the heavyweight championship before the end of this year, and I really like to get Ty's take on that. So let's check in with Tanya Evinger. Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it, for sure. I mean, you had a dominant run in bantamweight in Invicta. I mean, you're 7-0 with one no contest. You had wins over Kunitskaya, who we've seen in the UFC recently, Cindy Dandwa, Irene Aldana, Pani Kianzad. I mean, what was it like fighting in Invicta and being able to defend the belt so many times?
Oh man, I couldn't even explain that. Invicta was amazing. It was like one of the promotions where I got to finally shine, and you know, somebody gave me an opportunity to just fight, you know, and based off of my talents rather than, you know, I guess whatever other reasons they signed all these females to fight. But, you know, I just, it was just one of the best experiences and obviously a great platform for me to, you know, show my skills and prove that I'm, you know, ready for the, you know, top of the competition and stuff. You know, I just, I think nobody ever really gave me that chance. So, you know, it was cool. I loved it. I definitely loved it, fighting for him. I would love to fight more, even, you know, now being signed with UFC, but it seems like they just don't want to put me in cards. Don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we're able to see a fight more coming up. I mean, you took that short notice fight against Cyborg, UFC 214. How short notice was it?
It was a 3-week call. I got 2 weeks to train, and obviously I had to be out there like a week early for filming and all that kind of stuff. So I pretty much got a 2-week camp for that. It was a bummer, but you know, I'm not gonna lie. I would take it again and. You know, take my chances and try to do what I can. So, just the fighter I am. And, you know, I knew for some reason that was the fight they were going to give me. And, you know, and it is what it is. But, you know, I'd love to have that fight again just with a full camp.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, some of the things I noticed in the fight after watching it over and over again, I mean, your footwork was really good. Your movement was good in general. I mean, it didn't go your way, but I mean, whole experience, short notice and all, but you got to be on pay-per-view. What was it like, you know, your first experience in the UFC?
I think more people are thinking, like, more people think it's, like, something special and something, you know, some big thing more than it is. And, it, you know, to be honest, like, I fought in front of big crowds, you know, even back, like, in 2007 when I was fighting Hawaii. I fought out there a couple times, once for Elite XC and once for a Hawaiian promotion. And there was 10,000-plus people in that crowd, too, you know, and that was way back in, you know, 2007, and then with Invicta, you know, I think that, you know, I just don't feel like it's any different. It's not like it's something special, and oh, I'm on pay-per-view, and more people are watching me, and you know, it wasn't anything different than any other fight for me, so, you know, I just wish it would be an opportunity that, you know, was actually meant for me, or, you know, something where I can make a run at something, not just come in, you know, and doing you a favor and replacing somebody and filling a card. You know, I think that I would love to have a real run and, you know, give it a real opportunity, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you had that run in Invicta and you really had something special there. And signing with the UFC, I mean, you had a fight booked in January against Marion Renault, but you ended up with a knee injury. How's the rehab gone with that knee injury? Are you back to 100%? And did you get cleared this week to fight again?
No, the nurses, they had overbooked everything, so I got checked in and got in there, and then they said so they couldn't see me. So they tried to reschedule for this Monday, but, you know, I have to go out of town, so I'm not even going to get cleared this Monday, but it doesn't even matter. I've been begging and begging and begging UFC to put me on a card and try to get me on that August 25th card, and I just get no, like, real love out of it. So, you know, it's like, why? I mean, there's no reason for me to stress and cancel all my plans and do all these things and not even get any kind of, like, that. I just don't feel like they even give a shit to put me on a card. So I just don't, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, I ended up having two knee surgeries, and it was a bummer. And I'm back in there training and everything, and this is what it is, man. I'm working hard to rebuild and this and that, but you know, I don't really feel like it's gonna hold me back or be anything that's gonna keep me from continuing the way I was. I just think that you know, lack of opportunity is.
Yeah, for sure. And your next fight, I would assume, and I think you'd probably agree, be at bantamweight, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah. My next four fights are supposed to, according to my contract, they just took me at it, by the way, just for that one fight.
Yeah.
Obviously for that fight alone, and that's it. So all the rest of my contract is 135, and you know, I don't give a shit. I tell you what, I would fucking fight any of them 25ers too. They're just gonna tell me and actually commit to put me on a damn card and give me a fucking chance, and I will make whatever weight I have to make, you know. So.
Yeah, and I mean, it's awesome to hear that you're back training, and that's great, and hopefully you get cleared here soon, and we'll be able to get a fight announcement, like you said, looking for August, so it'd be great to see you back in the cage. I mean, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Where can fans find you online?
Just on social media. I mean, there ain't nobody out there trying to be me. So, you know, it's just my name. It's easy to find. I'm the one with all the crazy videos that most people don't approve of. I'm the one out there acting crazy, but yeah, you know, you can follow me through that, and you know, I don't really post much training or anything right now, just because, I mean, I'm not the type of person that trains 24/7 like these other fighters. You know, they must have sponsors that pay for all that, but I work a regular job and stuff like that, and then when they call me, I go get in training camp. You just see real crazy videos out of me rather than a bunch of training and stuff.
Awesome. Well, sounds good, Tanya. Good luck to you, and hopefully we can have you back on again.
Hey, yeah, definitely. Thanks for hitting me up and picking me up.
Man, that was awesome having former UFC featherweight title challenger Tanya Evinger on the podcast. Like she said, she's got another four fights on that UFC contract, so hopefully we can see her back in the cage later on this summer, possibly when she gets cleared from that knee there. And it'd be really interesting to see her competing in the bantamweight division. I think she could be a four. She's definitely going to be a top 15 gal in the division. I mean, former champ, you look at Yana Kuniskaya, and I mean, she had success against Cyborg early on in that fight. I know it didn't last long, but, you know, she built upon what Evinger did in her fight. Evinger got Cyborg into the clinch. Well, you also saw Holly Holm find success there. Then you saw Yana Kuniskaya trying to take her down. And don't forget, Tonya Evinger has a win and a no contest against Yana Kuniskaya. So, building upon all that, I think that she could go on a good run in the women's bantamweight division in the UFC. And again, hopefully we can see her back in the division. But really thankful to have her on the podcast. It was definitely an awesome interview, and we'll have to check back in with her when that fight gets announced. So right now, I'd like to take the time to thank my sponsors. We're brought to you today by First Row Collectibles. They're from Winnipeg, Manitoba. We had Curtis Housen from First Row on quite a while ago when the podcast first started up. And, you know, he's a big wrestling fan, a big part of the scene in Winnipeg. Head on over to his website. It's firstrow.ca. Use the promo code FNP at checkout. You'll get free shipping on your order. And I know we've got a lot of American listeners. So to you guys out there, keep in mind that the prices on the website are in Canadian dollars. So you're going to be saving roughly, you know, 25-26% on your order. They've got things like, you know, wrestling memorabilia, UFC autographs, hockey cards, baseball cards. The list goes on. You name it, it's at First Row. So head on over to firstrow.ca today. Also brought to you today by Sisu Mouthguards. And it's definitely one of the best mouthguards I've ever had. You know, I've harped on every single week just about. But the one game of hockey that I didn't wear my mouth guard, I broke my front tooth. And all my friends still make fun of me, and they can't believe that I'm sponsored by a mouth guard company. So, if you head on over to their website, sisuguard.com, use the promo code FNP10, you'll save 10% on your order. And they're really proud to recently announce that they partnered with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a National Childhood Cancer Research Foundation. And I mean, it's a topic that's close to home for a lot of people. So if you head on over to their website and you buy a yellow mouth guard, and it's got to be either the Arrow or Junior styles, they're going to give a 10% donation to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. So you can still use the promo code FNP10 at checkout, but just make sure you're looking for a yellow mouth guard and head on over to sisuguard.com. All right, so last week, you probably had the biggest week in combat sports that you're going to have all year with International Fight Week. It capped off with the Ultimate Fighter 27 season finale on Friday night. And then you also had UFC 226, which was, I mean, it was a fully stacked card. Lived up to the hype, minus maybe one fight. And Ty O'Keefe and I, we're going to break it down. So here we go. Ty, really appreciate you coming back on. I mean, you were really active this past weekend with Fansided. I saw a lot of different articles that you were popping out, and we got a lot to cover today. So I'd say probably the biggest news from this past weekend, and it more or less eclipsed the fact that Daniel Cormier ended Stipe's run as probably one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all time. And he was grateful in defeat for sure. Really humble guy, a great, you know, marketing guy. I'm sure he still has that contract with Modelo to be a brand ambassador in the States. But it's looking like later on this year, we're most likely going to see Brock Lesnar and DC fighting for the heavyweight belt. So just kind of want to get your take on, you know, what Brock Lesnar return means to the UFC. And what do you see as the outcome of this fight?
First of all, thanks again for having me back yet again. You know, this fight, we kind of knew Brock Lesnar was looming over the heavyweight division, you know, leading into UFC 226. He's been so inconsistent with, you know, how often he's fighting, when he's fighting, things like that, that we don't really know what's going to happen with this. Now, as you said, you know, DC's win over Miocic kind of does overshadow the fact that Miocic is the greatest heavyweight champion in UFC history, and one loss to Cormier does not change that fact. You know, obviously the UFC wants to cash in on this Lesnar thing, and Cormier's going to be retiring soon. But as I see it, this is a dead end for the UFC. To begin with, Cormier is going to be retiring, he said, when he turns 40, which I believe is next spring. If that's the case, and he's already talked about possibly having a light heavyweight title defense against Mauricio Shogunua, if that's the case, it looks pretty obvious that Cormier would have one light heavyweight title defense, the fight Lesnar, who is eligible to come back in January, now that he's re-entered the USADA testing pool as of July 3rd, I think they said.
Yeah.
And by the way, he also re-entered the USADA. Lesnar, you know, he re-entered that July 3rd. So this was planned before UFC 226, because otherwise he wouldn't have re-entered the USADA testing pool again.
One of the things that most people didn't mention online, and I don't know if Ariel talked about it, I listened to his podcast there yesterday, there was, I think what they classified it as an unknown participant in the USADA pool, and everybody kind of figured it was Brock Lesnar. I had seen that early on, and now it's pretty much confirmed that that was Brock Lesnar.
Well, the thing is, too, is that last time, you know, when he fought Mark Hunt, they cleared him. They said, look, you don't have to do the 4 months of testing. And they got burned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He failed that test. But as I said, this is a dead end for the UFC. Cormier, if he fights Lesnar, it would probably be January, February of next year. And then when he does that, that'll be it. That'll probably be Cormier's last fight. So no matter who wins that Lesnar-Cormier fight, Cormier is going to be gone. And if Lesnar somehow defeats Cormier, we know he's not going to stick around. So the UFC is not going to have a heavyweight champion in less than a year from now. So we're going to be right back at Miocic, and that is why he still today is the most significant heavyweight in not only the UFC, but on the planet. He is still going to go on a run, I believe. He's going to get the title back, whether it's from Lesnar or that he just gets it back. Who knows? He deserves it regardless. But neither Lesnar nor Cormier is going to stick around defending this for any length of time. So this is a dead end fight for the UFC, and I wish after how they got burned with the Lesnar failing the tests related to his Mark Hunt fight, which I believe was what, UFC 200, something like that.
UFC 200,
yeah. Yeah, it you know, since that happened, you would think that the UFC would wash their hands of this and get out of the Brock Lesnar business, because they need to get out of the Brock Lesnar business. Period. This is ridiculous. You know, it's frustrating. It's very frustrating.
I mean, I went back and watched the tape from UFC 200, and what a lot of people kind of forget is the fact that, yeah, I mean, it was totally overshadowed by the fact that Brock Lesnar pissed hot, but at the same time, he beat the shit out of Mark Hunt. Like, he totally destroyed him. I mean, it was two competing styles. You had a wrestler and a striker,
Mark Hunt has made his bread and butter by being an overpowering guy.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's pretty to watch or not, and that's what Lesnar is.
Yeah.
And Lesnar just happened to be a bigger, overpowering guy. So I don't want to give him too much credit for that win.
No, for sure. And that's kind of the thing that makes me a little bit nervous. I mean, I see the polls out there on Twitter. A lot of people are taking DC. I see the odds have shifted a lot lately in DC's favor. I think he's over a minus 200 favorite right now. And the thing that kind of scares me is the fact that, yes, Brock Lesnar lost his last two fights and that had a no contest, which was an overwhelming win after a long layoff. But I don't think it's going to be such a cut and dry finish for DC. Of course, the majority of fans are going to want to see Daniel Cormier win and, you know, continue to add to that legacy. I'm kind of surprised that, you know, he's shifted. You know, before UFC 226, it wasn't always legacy, but now it's a legacy thing for him. He's kind of realizing, I think, it's hit him that this is the end of his career. And
let's not forget, remember, what did Cain Velasquez do to Brock Lesnar?
Yeah.
And remember, who does Daniel Cormier basically live with in the gym?
Yeah.
Him and Cain Velasquez are like brothers. And Velasquez did us a favor by putting Lesnar to rest years ago. Unfortunately, he's come back to haunt the UFC. And Cormier is going to get that formula from Cain Velasquez, and that's going to be the end of it. I really think he's going to do similar, like we saw, you know, Miocic was bigger than Cormier, you know, physically.
Yeah.
And we thought, wow, how's he going to close the distance? How's he going to hit him hard enough, you know, to actually, you know, get him on the ground? And what did we hear all week? Cormier's knockout power. He's been knocking out guys in training left and right. And he drops Miocic. So after dropping Miocic, I think Miocic is way harder to knock out than Brock Lesnar is.
Yeah, I mean, the last time...
Brock Lesnar.
Yep.
Yeah. Brock Lesnar's chin is not as tough as it looks. You know, he looks like granite. It's not. It's really not.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of, not kind of surprised. I was really surprised, and I'm sure a lot of people were. I mean, I had figured that DC was going to win it, but it was going to be in the later rounds. TKO due to ground and pound. He was going to wrestle. And usually when you hear a guy, oh, you know, I was knocking out training partners, that's kind of a fairy tale. It didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
Or it's kind of, you know, Connor and Pauly Malignaggi. It's kind of stuff like that. But the last time I heard something like that, it was Michael Bisping getting ready to fight GSP. He was knocking out training partners, and it didn't work out for him in that fight. So I was kind of a little bit leery. But, I mean, it looks like we're going to have a super fight by the end of the year or early next year. And, you know, in the fallout of all of this, I think that there's going to be a chance that we see the Volkan Oezdemir Alex Gustafsson fight. I think that's going to end up being for a light heavyweight belt.
Yeah, I could see that. And Gustafsson, if anybody deserves another shot at Cormier, Gustafsson, he's paid his dues for so long.
Yeah.
He came the closest to defeating John Jones. You could honestly say he came closer to beating John Jones than Cormier did on two occasions. Cormier, you know, he did better. And obviously that's a style, that's a stylistic thing. You know, Gustafsson's a long, lanky guy like Jones. You know, there's a lot of matchup things there. You know, it doesn't always make a difference on who's beat who, but you know, Gustafsson deserves to be fighting for the light heavyweight title, period.
Yeah.
He absolutely does. And I'm not sure if that's going to come against Oezdemir or who it's going to come against at this point, because with Cormier's obligations, you would think he would get more money from a Lesnar fight.
Yeah.
So if it comes down to, okay, whether, I know he's recently said he wants to fight Shogun. You know, if he's got to choose between the two and he decides to extend, he wants to take some time off, okay, and Lesnar's eligible in January, you would think that he would dedicate more of his time towards the Lesnar fight because it would be a bigger payday, especially with his retirement right around the corner. And I got a feeling he's going to be one of these guys who sticks to what he said about retirement.
Yeah.
He's going to go out when he said he's going to go out, and he's going to coach, and he's going to be commentate. But that'll be the end of Daniel Cormier. And he'll walk out. I would bet money he'll walk out on top.
Yeah, which, for sure.
He deserves to as well. But yeah, Gustafsson needs to be in this conversation moving forward for light heavyweight title, no doubt.
Yeah, and I guess it was on the MMA Hour with Luke Thomas there yesterday that Gustafsson said as much, that hopefully that fight will be for an interim belt. I am of the mindset, you know, I was all right with interim belts for quite a while. I thought, you know, if it sells a pay-per-view or if it sells an event, so be it. But right now, I think it should just be a number one contender match, but that doesn't seem to be the way the UFC has been trending. But another number one contender matchup that could be made would be Alexander Volkov and Curtis Blaydes. I mean, Curtis Blaydes has been pissed off on Twitter. You know, a lot of people have been questioning too whether or not we're going to see Cain Velasquez return to the UFC, where he's been training so much with DC, whether or not he's healthy enough to make a return. But I think that the matchup to make in heavyweight would be the Volkov Blaydes fight.
Well, and after what Ngannou and Lewis pulled last weekend, you know, hey, that was such a disappointment that who else if not Blaydes?
Yeah.
Right? Because say if Lewis and Ngannou would have gone off like we thought it would have, and it would have been this epic slugfest that we were all expecting it to be, then we would be sitting here saying, okay, either Lewis or Ngannou would be the likely next fight for Miocic, probably, even if it was an Ngannou-Miocic rematch. At this point, I wouldn't mind seeing Blaydes-Miocic. I think that's the fight to make, in my opinion. I think Miocic wants to stay busy. He's already called for a rematch. He's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna go hide and take all this time off. And Blaydes deserves an opportunity against a big, big name. It's perfect.
Yeah.
I really think, you know, Blaydes Miocic, and then the winner of Blaydes Miocic gets the winner of Cormier Lesnar, or, you know, if that's how that goes down. Or they can make the whole Blaydes Miocic, you know, put the temporary interim title tag on it. And then when Lesnar or Miocic takes the belt into retirement, Miocic or Blaydes, who wins that fight, can become the regular heavyweight champion, and we can go back to normality and get rid of some of these gimmicks.
The one thing that I really like, and you know, UFC's kind of got lightning in a bottle that they can capitalize on right now in the heavyweight division. You've got Curtis Blaydes, who's a marketable guy. Francis Ngannou, I mean, it's a shame that now all of a sudden he's come out and said that he's gun-shy and afraid from his last fight, which, I mean, it makes sense. I've never been in a fight like that before, but I would assume I would be too. And you've got Alexander Volkov coming over, you know, M1 Global champ, Bellator champ, and he's faced some tough competition. I mean, Fabricio Werdum, I didn't have him winning that fight, and he rolled right over him. So, you know, there's a lot of matches to be made in the heavyweight division, but another matchup. Go ahead.
And just one quick thing is that, unfortunately, the next few years, the heavyweight division may depend on not just Miocic, but how if Ngannou's able to get past this mental block he's carried with him. Because we all know that when he's everything's firing on all cylinders, that guy almost decapitated Alistair Overeem.
Okay? Yeah.
He is a monster. If he can get his cardio built up, work on his takedown defense, get a little bit of basic ground game, kind of like Chuck Liddell did, you know, and guys like that, he is going to be a force years to come. I don't see Lewis being a force, unfortunately, for the long term, simply because of his back problems. things like that. He's got a lot. He's fighting through a lot of pain to set foot in that octagon right now.
Yeah.
And you know, and also Lewis doesn't, like he said on the MMA Hour the other day, said he didn't strive to be, or on Errol Hawani's new show, rather. He didn't strive to be the best. He didn't care about being a champion. Doesn't care about whatever. He just looks at it like a job. He's a prize fighter. He gets paid for fighting. He'll fight anybody for money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And a guy like that isn't driven the same way.
No, and it's a shame.
I'm saying can't be champion. I'm just saying it's not the same drive.
It's a shame to hear that from him because he's one of the funniest personalities in the sport. I mean, I loved it. When that guy opens his mouth, it's always something good. It was definitely a shame.
Did a lot for Houston during the floods.
Yeah.
Hurricane relief too.
Yeah, going around saving people, driving around his massive truck. And, I mean, it's a shame for a guy like that. Like, I look back at that Mark Hunt fight. I mean, most people go back to the Travis Brown fight when he get kicked in the stomach and he was having some pain. And then, you know, you watch that Hunt fight, man, he really hurt his back. So from that fight on forward, I mean, the Tabora fight, he was hurting that fight too. And I started to, and I'm sure a lot of people did, I started to notice a pattern. And then it came out on Ariel Helwani's show that he's been receiving magnesium shots in his back every single week so he can train and fight. So it's definitely a shame for him. I mean, realistically, that fight was more or less a number one contender fight as well. And the winner could possibly fight for a title, but it's not looking like Derek Lewis will or Francis Ngannou at this point.
And let's not forget, it wasn't just Ngannou who was, you know, failing to engage. If Lewis would have been at the top of his game, he would have capitalized on Ngannou's hesitation, and he would have knocked him completely out because Ngannou was so hesitant, right? And so Lewis even admitted after the fight that he doesn't think he deserves a title shot next, you know? So maybe Lewis Miocic would be something we could look at if Blades isn't, you know, going to be available or if something happens or if it's not the right matchup. I think the two biggest fights to make have nothing to do with DC and Lesnar right now. I think the two biggest heavyweights fights to make right now both involve Miocic because that is what is going to depend the future of, decide the path we take, you know, for the future heavyweight division, not what this gimmick with that DC and Lesnar is.
Yeah.
It's temporary, folks.
Now, I think realistically in the heavyweight division, I've said it, but I think, you know, Blades and Volkov. And then this coming weekend, you've got Blagoy Ivanov taking on JDS. And I think that matchup's really important. Blagoy Ivanov with a win for him. I mean, he's going to be in the top 10 for sure. And I didn't realize it until recently. I mean, he's got a stellar record, only losses to Alexander Volkov and Bellator. But the guy almost died like multiple times. I mean, he got stabbed. It was a 12-inch long stabbing right into his heart, suffered an infection, came back into Bellator and just kept winning. So he's a super marketable guy, you know, likes to get fights, you know, finished somewhat early. He's got some submission wins as well. And I mean, he's, like I said, marketable guy.
You know, JDS to Junior Dos Santos, I expected to hear more from him at this point. You know, we've seen how dangerous he can be, what he did to Velasquez, what he's done to, you know, he knocked out Miocic, you know, years ago before Miocic got revenge on him. But Dos Santos has so much power and so much talent. You never know what you're really going to get these days from him. And you got to think heading into this fight on Saturday that this is going to be one of his last chances to make a real impression in a main event fight, especially it's in Boise, right?
Yeah, it's in Boise.
Boise, Idaho, especially in North American soil. Yeah. I think if JDS from here on out doesn't come through with a very impressive performance in Boise, I think the only time we might see him in a main event will be in Brazil.
Yeah.
Maybe a European card or something like that, but I would even be surprised at that. I think this is his last chance to make an impression, especially with all these guys coming up in the heavyweight division. He's just been left in the dust. You know what I mean? He really has. Went through injuries, through lots of stuff, you know, losses, injuries, poorly timed, lots of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the one Ivanov fight that really, you know, showcases his skills is when he fought Sean Jordan here recently. I mean, Sean Jordan, 265. Yeah. Like, I mean, he missed weight for PFL recently. He's 6 feet tall, and he beat him in the first round, knocked him out. So,
Sean Jordan had a decent chin.
Yeah, and I'd like to see JDS come back, you know, return to form. It was definitely hard to see him getting popped by USADA for diuretic and then the aftermath of that, but it's great to see him back for sure. And it's a good card this weekend. I mean, you've got Sage Northcutt on the card. There's some other big names. Darren Elkins
coming back too, right?
Bermudez, Rick Glenn. I mean, a lot of people are taking Dennis Bermudez in that fight, but Rick Glenn's no joke. I mean, former World Series of Fighting champ, beat Halifax's own Gavin Tucker, and I mean, he beat him bad. And yeah, Randy Brown, Nico Price, Kat Zingano, Marion Renault. Like, it's a decent card, and it might fly under the radar a little bit because you've got so much Bellator this weekend. But there is a pretty good UFC card sneaking up.
Oh, very good. And when I saw the card, Justin Scoggins, too.
Yeah.
It's going to be funny. I mean, when I saw the card, I could not believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know July is usually a busy month, and UFC likes to throw things. And this is why the UFC's roster size is so valuable. And this is why Bellator trails, right? Because if you don't have the names to keep stacking these cards, card after card after card, you get buried in the headlines. You get buried in social media like Bellator. Just doesn't have the roster size to keep putting up cards like this. But look at the UFC. I mean, it's one after the other. And they seem lately to be coming up with more of these fight night cards, these free cards on TV that are like this, that are like 8 or 9 fights. And you look and you say, oh, my God, wow, this could be a pay-per-view possibly even. Yep. You know, you think some of these fights. And I mean, yeah, even like the preliminary card headliners are getting better. And the early cards, they're really starting to even them out. I mean, the UFC is really putting together the best product by far, and there's really, this weekend should be a card that people should tune into, especially if, you know, it's free.
Yeah, and I mean, to go back to 226, and to your point, one of the fights was supposed to be one of the Fight Pass prelims that ended up getting moved way up on the main card. You had Mike Perry and Paul Felder, and I've been an outspoken critic of Mike Perry's. I don't like the antics, but you know what? This week, he kind of started to put it together, and I really think the move to Jackson Wink has paid off. I feel like they've coached him personally. And, you know, they've taken the time, you know, hey, watch what you're saying, whatnot. And I mean, he was out there with his shirt off, hooping and hollering into the camera, but he didn't say anything that was overly offensive. And in the fight,
he's toned it down.
Toned
it down. And it's like with Mike Perry, he's like lightning in a bottle.
Exactly.
You gotta kind of contain it and then, you know, open it a little bit and point it somewhere if you want to get the best results, kind of aim it like a laser gun or something. He is so talented. He's got so much raw ability. That if you can just get them to focus and you can get them to stop with the other stuff. And you saw right away, too, in the beginning of that fight, what's he doing? That Jackson Wink leg kick.
Yep.
That Holly Holm has made money on. I mean, Cerrone uses it. And I'm a big fan of Jackson Wink just because they turn out so many great fighters from every background, from every walk of life. It's not like you need to have a certain kind of pre-resume to get there, any prerequisites, rather, to go there. You know what I mean? They can get it out of almost anybody. And you're right, Mike Perry was definitely, he was still himself, but he was the PG version of himself. And that's the guy he's got to be moving forward, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's not saying crazy, crazy stuff. But to me, that was the surprise of the card. The whole night was Perry's performance against Paul Felder. Obviously, Felder is a welterweight, but he walks around at 170, 175. So it's not like it's completely foreign to him. Obviously, Perry was a little bit bigger, and that cut really, really, really played a big part because it was right over his eye, and I know it wasn't going right into his eye, but it was dripping down onto his face, and that headbutt, you know, that took him that headbutt, it had to be a distraction. It happened right away. And also, I think Felder broke his arm, didn't he? And initially, or fractured his arm, possibly?
Yeah.
He was definitely holding his right arm back to some extent. You could see it was bad.
Yeah,
it was a surprise performance of the card for me was Perry's win.
A lot of analysts and people on Twitter had said that possibly he'd broken both of the bones in his right arm. And I mean, as somebody a few years ago playing hockey, I took an open ice check and broke both of those bones right by the wrist, same injury. And I mean, I skated right off the ice. There was no way I was going to keep playing. But but Paul Felder, he was throwing, you know, spinning elbows, spinning back fist with that arm. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Got to be one of the toughest guys, I mean, in MMA, period. Yeah. And what a stand-up guy. I mean, he's taken strides as a broadcaster. He's definitely a personable guy. He's had to be, you know, he's been bumped from fight to fight. And finally, he's able to fight. It's at 170. They say, he walks around, you know, between 170 to 190. I mean, he's a huge lightweight for sure. Yeah. So, no shame in a loss there for him.
Yeah, and I don't think that fight hurts his resume, as you said, you know, it doesn't, because he's not going to stay in that division.
Yeah.
You know, he's just not. And there are so many guys. Look at the size of Darren Till.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these guys are really big. You know, Felder does not have a future at the welterweight, but he doesn't need one because he has such a bright future in the lightweight division. And not only is he talented, but he's an intelligent fighter. He's really good spatial awareness. He's really good at closing the distance. He's really good at adapting to the style of other fighters when they come in. They try, you know, guys who try to switch stances, guys who try to, you know, he seems to just be able to adapt on the fly, and that's because of his intelligence and his knowledge.
Yeah, and,
he's a hard worker, too.
Yeah. If you look back into his resume, he's got, like, a BJJ background. He's got a wrestling background. He's got a Muay Thai background. Like, he's so well-rounded. And as well with the broadcasting, I mean, it rounds out a perfect athlete, really. And it was a shame that he got hurt, because I'd say if he didn't get hurt, it would have been a lot closer fight. You know what? Why don't we hop into probably the best lightweight matchup that was on the card with Michael Chiesa and Anthony Pettis?
Pettis weighed in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry to cut you off. I was really kind of, taken aback by Chiesa's comments earlier in the week. I know he is taking action against Conor McGregor, legal action against Conor McGregor for the bus incident where he was cut. And, you know, to be fair, that did prevent him from fighting on that card.
Yeah.
He claimed that he lost the title shot because of that, because if he would have been available, then they would have asked him because he was higher ranked than Pettis. So he would have fought Khabib Nurmagomedov, and, you know, that fight would have been it, and he would have had his title shot. And, you know, it's hard to listen to something like that, hard to believe something like that.
Yeah.
When he didn't make weight, he said he wasn't going to fight a lightweight anymore at the weigh-ins after he didn't make weight. Then he put his arms up and said, I'm done with lightweight, and he wants to go up to welterweight. I know people around him have been saying he's going to be fighting at welterweight, but if he would have won this fight, he'd be obviously singing a different tune and demanding a title shot right now.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be ranked, doesn't deserve to be a top five guy, but if you look at his resume, other than, facing Pettis, and who he lost to, obviously, he hasn't beaten anybody really of consequence at all. For him to even, and we're not talking about a shallow division here. This is a division that's always historically been right full of contenders. And Pettis, you know, look at Pettis. This guy's a former WEC and UFC lightweight champion, and he was falling out of the top 10 heading into UFC 226. And he's lost some close fights, and I think it's great to see Anthony Pettis get back on track because, you know, I think Anthony Pettis is one of those few fighters who can be a champion from before, you know, have a slump for a few years, and then come back and really legitimately, you know, challenge for that lightweight throne. He is not washed up. He's a young guy. He's evolving. He's smart. He's got a great camp with Rufus. He's got a great training facility there. You know, he's got great training partners, and he's always willing to learn. So I think it's better for the division that Pettis actually won, because I don't think that Chiesa would have been able to sustain this type of success moving forward. I think if he would have beat Pettis, he would have been overmatched in his next bout. Also, if he's unable to make this weight, and it's a problem. And it wasn't just a problem making weight. I don't know if you heard him speaking on Ariel's show when he called in there this week. He was saying, like, he woke up in the middle of the night from this weight cut, panicking with his girlfriend. He started crying, broke down. He thought he was dying, he said. Okay, and I'm not minimizing what he went through. I'm just saying, if he's getting that reactive, body's reacting like that to making this cut, and he still didn't make the weight.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of these things, like I said weeks ago when I wrote that article about weight cutting. This is one of those cases that we say, okay, then let's move him up.
Yeah.
Move him to the welterweight. The guy's putting, what more does he need to say?
What more needs to
be done? Does he need to, you know, collapse full, you know, like go through what Chris Cyborg goes through to get moved up? Or, you know, someone in his circle, I really think, should take him aside and say, let's go, let's do this welterweight thing. He's a small guy. He's got good reach, good experience. But yeah, I was happy to see Pettis win. And overall, I think we're going to be hearing a lot from Anthony Pettis in the next 18 months.
It's going to be tough for Michael Chiesa to move up. I mean, like you said, he had the height and reach advantage in this fight. It was quite an advantage. He moves up the welterweight. He's going to be one of the smaller welterweights. He was really thin going into this fight. I mean, he was only 2.5 pounds over. But yeah, I mean, I'm done shaking his hands. And yeah, I'm going to welterweight. That's not a classy move on your part, really. You don't have to do that in front of the reporters.
No, yeah, it's kind of, you know, we're going to criticize no matter what as fans, right?
Yeah.
You know, we always have our opinions and everything. But there just seems to be something that he feels awfully entitled.
Yeah.
He deserves a lot of stuff that I'm sure a lot of other veteran fighters would disagree with. I'm sure a lot of other veteran fighters are thinking, hey, man, you know, I didn't get this and I did this for X amount of time and whatever. This Conor McGregor era of entitlement, you know, as much as I love watching Conor McGregor and all he's done for the sport, this era of entitlement, it spreads, and it spreds to things like this, and we're seeing it. Guys like Chiesa.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. He's a talented guy, though. And you're right. If you were to, like, just hypothetically, it'll never happen. But say he were to fight Darren Till.
Yeah.
He would be much smaller unless he completely, I don't know, gained. He would have to gain 20 pounds in his walking around weight.
Yeah.
In order to do that. And that would break him out of his physical, you know, his size he is now. I don't think he would dominate, but I don't think he's got a future. And this is why people say, let's have a 165 division. We don't need an extra division.
Well,
but yeah, going forward, I think his future is in welterweight division. I really do.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, doesn't really have any huge wins. You look at the Kevin Lee fight. I mean, it kind of ended in a little bit of controversy. Wasn't any controversy to me. I mean, he was done. The fight was over, and he wanted to complain about it. So there was a lot. Yep.
And in the division where we're talking about, you got Eddie Alvarez, Nurmagomedov, and Frankie Edgar, who sometimes competes as a lightweight, and Conor McGregor, and Tony Ferguson. Kevin Lee, Michael Chiesa fight is never, at this point, important enough to get all up in arms about and act like it would have affected the division. Kevin Lee did not deserve his interim title shot when he got it either.
Yeah.
Against Tony Ferguson last fall. He had the same type of resume as Chiesa does. You know what I mean? It's not impressive. He hasn't beat anybody and he lost that fight. And you know, but then again, that's, you know, he's making noise in social media and he's got a great following. And Kevin Lee's a fantastic, phenomenal athlete.
Yeah.
He's an amazing fighter to watch. I mean, this kid's got he's got a great, great future. He really does. But yeah, in this division for Chiesa to be up in arms about things like this, or, you know, how his outcome with, as you said, when he was fighting, I can't remember now, the controversial finish.
Kevin Lee. Yeah, submission, Kevin Lee,
rather. Yeah, when you've got all these other guys, I mean, it's never going to be big enough to matter and affect the division like he thought it did. So
one of the fights that, I don't know if I'd say, you know, there wasn't enough buzz around it, but Khalil Roundtree taking on Gokhan Saki. After the fight, Roundtree got a performance bonus, and it just kind of got overshadowed by everything. A lot of MMA analysts, journalists, you name it, most people were wrong about this fight. And the one thing that I didn't like after the fight that a lot of people were saying was, well, this is the end of Gokhan Saki. Clearly he's not an MMA fighter. He's got no future in the game. I mean, to me, he took a hard straight left. He had his hands low. Mind you, he did have his hands higher than his last fight. I mean, his last fight against Henrique da Silva, his hands were down by his hips and he was just throwing hooks. In this fight, he brought them up. His movement was better, but he was bouncing up and down. His movement was better. So he's bouncing up and down. At the exact second his hands went down, it left his chin exposed and Roundtree hit him.
That was it.
And it was perfect.
It's the part of the problem is that the UFC and other people hyped him up so much when he first came in. They were like, oh, this is the future of light heavyweight. Or, you know, it's like he's going to be a champion. You got to see this guy. He's going to be unstoppable. And, you know, he did okay in his first fight. He didn't even get a first-round knockout, you know. So all of a sudden he fulfills all these prophecies. You know, he's this great guy everybody thinks he is. And then, all of a sudden he loses this fight, you know, this fight on Saturday. And that's fine. But for people to say that, oh, now he's done, you know, Max Holloway stumbled quite a few times on his way to the top as well. And obviously, Saki doesn't have the background that Holloway had. But Saki has proved capable of learning. You know, he's able to adapt. And he's going to learn a ground game. He's going to learn to keep his hands up. It's not kickboxing. It's not Muay Thai. He's going to learn that, you know, he's got to play better defense. But, you know, to say that he's not going to be a champion. He's done, da-da-da-da. There have been so many guys who've stumbled on the way up. I mean, Miocic lost to Stefan Struve, okay? You know, so
well,
to
think,
say that, people
think
jump
about,
on these guys so quick, man.
Think about it, light heavyweight. You've got Jimmy Manoa, who was right up at the top. When did he step into a boxing gym? What was he, 32? Yeah. I mean, age isn't as big of an issue when you're in the the heavier weight divisions.
Well, it doesn't seem to be. It's weird, eh, though? The heavier divisions, age doesn't seem right. Age doesn't seem to matter, but in the lighter divisions, it kind of does.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
so
that's strange. That's really strange. You're right.
I think we'll see Saki back in. I think for Roundtree, I mean, it's a great win. He got to make some money, but it's going to be tough once you crack the top 15. There's a lot of good fighters in that.
Where's Roundtree go from here?
Yeah, totally beats me. I mean, the light heavyweight division in the UFC isn't you know, stacked, but they're still good fighters. And so one of my theories right now is, well, what do you do at the light heavyweight division where the title's kind of in limbo? And I started to think, well, maybe the UFC could go the Bellator route, and maybe we see a Grand Prix at light heavyweight. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility where you have an ESPN Plus deal coming in. But
remember, they used to be their big show division.
Yeah, exactly.
The division was this you know, the stars of MMA for years. Rampage, Rashad Evans, Forrest Griffin. I mean, there were so many guys who came out of that. Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, when he competed as light heavyweight as well. So many guys who came out of that in the last few years. It seems like the I don't know if it was the Rampage, Rashad, Forrest era. Once that kind of ended, there's been a lot of, you know, it's been all over the place, and it's all dependent on two guys. You know, Cormier and Jones have hogged the spotlight for so long, deservedly so. But you know, and Gustafson's kind of been like the third guy. But maybe a guy, you know, Roundtree could fight a guy like Teixeira, you know, or something like that. I don't think he's ready for Gustafson or anything like that yet. But, you know, maybe Glover Teixeira in Brazil, or that would fill up a stadium, I'm sure. UFC loved sell tickets to that. And, but yeah, it's hard to tell where Roundtree goes from here, because there's such that drop off, right? The top five or top three guys are so good. And the rest of the top 10's like, nah, are these guys really top 10 fighters? So, you know, there's that definite, you know, difference between it. It'd be interesting to see what the UFC does, what Sean Shelby does, rather.
Yeah.
With matchmaking.
And as far, you know, your last fight that was on the prelims, that was probably another one that caused the most buzz. Paulo Costa, Ariel said it yesterday, probably the best looking human being, period, that he's ever seen in his life. I mean, this guy's cut out of stone, and he shows up to the face-offs before the weigh-ins, shows up to the face-offs in like a, you know, three-piece suit. And the guy walks into the cage. I mean, it just seems to bounce when he walks in there. And he got the knockout over Uriah Hall, which, I mean, some might think, oh, well, that's easy. I mean, Uriah Hall almost died during his last weight cut.
Uriah Hall is a very talented fighter, and he looked good until losing it.
I mean, he's a counter-striker by trade. That's kind of what he does. And, I mean, against Krzysztof Jotko, it was more or less a comeback win or come-from-behind win, but that's kind of his style. So it was definitely, you know, an eye-opener for Costa. One thing that I noticed, and it wasn't officially scored as a knockdown, but Hall dropped Costa about 2 minutes into that second round. Like, he dropped him straight down. He was down on both knees, and he was able to get back up. So you know that Costa's got a chin now. I think we all know that. And, you know, Hall was tired in that exchange there. So after that, Costa outlasted him. One of the things I noticed, too, in the first round, there were a couple of cup checks by Costa. And the referee was Mark Smith. He made it clear the first time that, you know, you can't be doing that. No cup check. And it happened the second time. They almost brought one of his corner guys or translator over to kind of relay the information once more. So it wasn't really fair there. Thought they should have taken a point, but it didn't really matter. And he got the second round knockout win.
Yeah, and, you know, and Costa, he is such, like you said, he's such a physical specimen. This guy, you think, how could this guy not be one of the greatest fighters in his division? And he is such a good striker, and you saw his power. You know, he's great at the body shots, you know, and he's great at absorbing shots. He's now 4-0 in the UFC. Yeah. He hasn't lost yet. And he wants to face Chris Weidman. He was talking about after the fight. He wants to fight Weidman. And I think that would make one hell of a fight. Yeah. Weidman, Costa, and it does, in a way, make sense. However, I don't know if it'll happen, because Weidman, you know, he did beat Gastelum somewhat recently. And Weidman does, you know, is kind of moving towards a title shot in that division. He kind of, you know, we're working that thing out with Whitaker and Gastelum and everything. But Weidman's definitely in the mix for a title shot right now. No one can argue that. And I think for him to agree to Costa, he would have to be risking. He has so much to lose fighting Costa, and so little to gain. Costa, just even after beating Hall, Costa is ranked 10th for the first time in his career. He's on UFC.com. He's a 10th ranked middleweight contender, which is fantastic. But I don't think that Weidman is going to be agreeing to a fight like that, because Weidman doesn't need to right now.
So who do you think the fight is to make? I put up a poll on Twitter, and I have two different ideas. So everybody seems to think that Israel Adesanya deserves a shot. And I mean, we might as well transition from this into the Ultimate Fighter. But, you know, does Israel Adesanya deserve the shot, or a guy?
I think he does. Well, I think he does. I disagree. Adesanya, Paulo Costa is the fight to make.
Yeah,
Costa, Adesanya. And, you know, Costa said in the post-fight interview, he doesn't know who Adesanya is. And if anybody believes that, they're crazy, because of course he knows who he is. Now, it's kind of crazy. Adesanya wasn't even a ranked fighter heading into the tough finale. Yeah. And, you know, Brad Tavares was the top 10
yeah,
guy.
He was eight.
And
yeah.
I personally like the rankings. You know, I think they're significant for a lot of reasons. And for Adesanya to defeat Tavares, who's an ranked guy and a very, very tested guy, Tavares is no joke. And, you know, Adesanya is undefeated. Costa is undefeated. It seems like they're on a collision course with each other, and it's a perfect matchup. And I don't understand why there would be any hesitation to make this fight.
See,
you know what I mean? Perfect fight for one of these free cards, main event for a free card, though, right?
It would be. And it's a super entertaining fight. The one thing I don't want to have happen is you derail one of these hype trains. You have like a Mark Jacasey and Hooker fight where Hooker
that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to, you know, all of a sudden one goes to nothing and the other one skyrockets.
Oh, for sure.
But you're right. The media does that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the perfect fight to make for Paulo Costa right now is pit him against a guy who has a really similar style. Don't put him against Adesanya. Have him fight Thiago Santos. I mean, Santos weighed in at the Ultimate Fighter finale, which I was surprised. I had no idea he was going to be a part of that. And just in case they had him there, made the weight, of course. But I think, you know, you watch Thiago Santos, and I mean, he's one of the most exciting middleweights to watch. And if if you watch the tape, he does the same thing every time. It's the same stance, jab, 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 and then he sets up the spinning wheel kick every single time. So it'll be interesting to see what matchmaking takes place. I mean, the middleweight division, the UFC is stacked. But like you said,
I don't think we'll get that fight with Thiago Santos, because they are marketing Adesanya so much right now, and Costa has the talent to be a star.
Yeah.
But Costa has more of a Brazilian following and isn't that popular in North America yet.
No.
If you're Sean Shelby in the UFC and Dana White, you got to think of it like, okay, Adesanya Costa would make more sense, because Adesanya's already got somewhat of traction in terms of a fan base in North America, and he can help to introduce Costa to the rest of North American masses.
Yeah.
Those two are to fight like one of these fight night main events. And that's really why I think, and you're right though, but it would make more sense for him to fight a guy like you said, like Thiago Santos. It's just that I don't know. I don't think they'll do it. I think they're really big on right now, this, since they've been sold, they're real big on making the bigger name fights, you know, since WMEIMG took over. So
there's definitely a lot of fights to be made after 226. I mean, not to spend time on it, but just so we have enough time for the Ultimate Fighter. You know, Rafael Sunsao with his win there, where does he rank? I mean, only real loss lately is to the champ. So a lot of people saying he doesn't deserve, you know, a shot at the title. And we'll see what happens between Garbrandt and Dillashaw there. But Rafael Sunsao, man, he looked dynamic. I mean, he was throwing leg kicks. Like, he looked really, really good. 93-20 in total strikes going his way. Yeah. So great for him.
The problem with him is he's in a division that's led by two very, very prominent guys in Dillashaw Garbrandt.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who they are. Everybody's seen them. Everybody in MMA is aware of them. And so few are aware of a Sunsao.
Exactly.
And yet a Sunsao is like, you know, Dillashaw Garbrandt right now are 1A. A Sunsao is 1B.
Yeah, and
Dominic Grip. But yet a Sunsao doesn't have the traction to get the fight he needs to be, you know, against Dillashaw Garbrandt or whoever. I think maybe I would love to see a Sunsao Dominic Cruz, if Dominic Cruz is going to fight. You know,
so
I would like to see that fight.
Like, I went down through the rankings. I went on, the world rankings, and I had a look down through there and to see who had fights, what was going on. Obviously, Dominic Cruz doesn't have a fight, and that would make perfect sense. But, I mean, if he's not available, I think another good fight for him, you know, you'd pit style against style, but at the same time, it'd be Brazilian-Brazilian, which is kind of tough, and you don't always like to do it. But John Lineker would be a perfect matchup for a Sunsao.
John Lineker's a game fighter. That guy can...
Hands of stone.
He's a brawler, but he's also a tactician.
Yeah.
Yeah, he puts on good fights. Again, though, you would think that, you know, a Sun Tzu deserves one of these kind of fight night main events in his next time out, and Lineker and Sun Tzu won't sell much.
No.
You know, I don't know, maybe a Sun Tzu needs to wait a little bit after coming through with this performance, kind of hold his leverage, because wait till this Garbrandt-Dillashaw blows over.
Yeah.
Before, you know, wait till that rematch happens. When's that happening? August?
Yeah, UFC, remember. Is it 227? Yeah.
So July 27th. Yeah, okay. So once that blows over, you know, I think Asensio should just hold firm right now.
Yeah.
And wait for that whole thing to pass over, and then he'll be far more attractive to whoever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, also on the card, Jakar Close with a great win. Both guys coming off losses to David Taymor, who a lot of people were kind of saying, David Taymor who? But that guy's a good fighter. Like, you can't sleep on David Taymor or his brother Daniel. So a good win for Jakar Close. You also had Curtis Milliner getting, you know, a really, really close win against Max Griffin. If you look at the strikes, like, they were nearly identical. So you'd have to go round by round in that one. It was a unanimous decision win, but it was a lot closer than most people thought. And then probably the best fight on the prelims, and I guess it was really fight past prelims, but Dan Hooker, I mean, he's got it going on. Like, 16 to 17 wins by finish. He's finished his last four opponents, all wins. I think he's like second for the most finishes in a row in the UFC. I mean,
everybody is talking about Dan Hooker this
year.
If you notice, everybody is. I've heard more about Dan Hooker in the last 3 days than I've ever heard about him in his entire career. And I've heard more about Hooker than some of these other much bigger names coming out of this big weekend. Hooker has definitely got, he's maybe again, one of these guys needs to hold firm after such a strong performance and say, look, I am one of the best guys in this division. I deserve an elite opponent.
Yep.
And until you give it to me, I'm not doing anything. And you know, some of these guys like Sun Tzu and these guys, they're going to have to start doing this.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, there's no breakthrough with these names. And you have problems like you see like in the light heavy division where Shogun, who is an irrelevant heavy, like heavyweight pretty much these days, he's going to, you know, he's all of a sudden in the running to fight Cormier possibly. And McGregor, you know, revived Nate Diaz's career. Despite Nate Diaz being irrelevant, to put a stop to those things, I guess you got to kind of get guys like a Sun Tzu and Hooker. You got to get those guys chances against these bigger guys, so we don't have to keep going back to these irrelevant, washed-up former guys, you know, that aren't going to move forward.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at his last two wins. I mean, he beat Gilbert Burns and Jim Miller. Those guys are gamers. Like, those aren't easy wins. So
and Jim Miller's been around the block too. You can't take anything away. I think people underestimate beating a guy like Jim Miller or a guy like Jeremy Stevens, who now is you know guys like that. They underestimate beating guys like that, like beating a Clay Guida.
That's what I was thinking.
Who may not have ever held a belt, but man, they've been around the block, and there's a reason they're in these divisions for so long, and their records are always, you know, what they are. People need to understand that those wins are sometimes more valuable than beating some of these big names, because these big names are now just getting to be big names because they're big names, you know, if that makes any sense. You know, it's like famous for being famous, same type of thing. It's like Kardashians of MMA or something. Ridiculous.
There's the soundbite right there, the Kardashians of MMA. And then your last fight, you had Moyle and Whitmire, which was more than likely forgettable for most MMA fans.
For the 10 people that might have watched it, and no disrespect to the
girls. No, for sure.
They deserve to be on that card. And I guess I wasn't that disappointed with it, but we were all expecting so much from this event.
Yep.
Whether it was tough on Friday or UFC 226 on Saturday.
Yep.
We were all just expecting every fight to be like the greatest fight ever. So I think sometimes battles like that, you know, kind of get overlooked and heavily criticized when they don't deserve it, you know?
Yeah, and you know, on my end, I had taken Moyle to win the fight. I figured, you know, she had more experience on the ground. Yeah. I think it was even, I just turned on Fight Pass yesterday, and I was watching the live feed, and it was The Ultimate Fighter that Jamie Moyle was on. And, you know, they said, oh, she's got such a great ground game. You know, if the fight goes to the ground, she's going to win. And against Whitmire dominated. Like, it was a great fight for her. I had mentioned it on Twitter. She had a win over Emily Ducote, who's going to be fighting, I think, this weekend in Bellator. So, and she just fought for the flyweight championship not that long ago. So, good win there. But that pretty much rounds out 226. And I mean, it was probably, you know, the most entertaining event we've seen this year, and maybe we will see this year.
And, you know, I agree, but I hope not, because that means the rest of the year we're going to be like, oh, well, nothing's going to be as good as we've already gotten. So, you know, I don't want to live life like that. I can handle it. So I'm going to pretend that there's going to be a bunch more cards. And this, I think they're going to New York in November, right?
Yeah.
Talking about New York in November or something. You got to imagine that's going to be massive.
Toronto cards. Toronto always delivers.
Toronto on, what, December 8th?
Yeah.
I think it is. And, of course, Moncton.
Yeah,
Way earlier than that, they're coming to Moncton, and they're going to be in Calgary very soon.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Canadian, you know, we're going to have a big part for the rest of the year, and that's fantastic. And it's nice to see, you know, so many different Canadian MMA media guys and girls, obviously men and women who are out supporting, getting the exposure they get and doing their jobs in the States. And yeah, it'll be great. But I think New York will be a huge card.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dana White said right now we're not talking about a fight with Conor McGregor at all. I find that hard to believe. John Kavanaugh has no reason to lie. I don't think John Kavanaugh, you know, the SBG head coach, I don't think John Kavanaugh is in the business of lying. And John Kavanaugh seems to believe that there is a fight on the horizon, and that he's made it clear that McGregor is, you know, preparing for a fight. And I think if McGregor is going to fight within the next even 18 months, it will be on that November card in New York, if that's when it is. Also he's got a following everywhere, and what would be a bigger towards end of the year type card than to bring McGregor back and have him face Khabib, Nurmagomedov in November or something like that. I mean, that would be a massive fight that I think is going to happen maybe one day. But I tell you what, it seems like when Dana White starts with Lesnar, he wants to forget about, he can't do Lesnar and Conor McGregor at the same time.
Yeah.
So he's on Lesnar now for a little while. So now, you know, he's, oh, we're not doing anything with Conor. And then when Lesnar evaporates and goes away again, oh, McGregor's coming back. You know, and so whatever. But no, if this is going to be the best card of the year, I don't want to live like that. So I'm going to pretend we're going to have a lot more great cards. And hey, maybe Bellator, some of these Bellator cards coming up too, you know, casual fans out there.
Yeah.
These are the free cards that then this is the time that Bellator can grab that spotlight coming off of International Fight Week, where the UFC's got some big offerings that are in the, you know, in the past now. Bellator can say, hey, let's grab this spotlight. We have Paramount Network. We have an amazing platform. We're a free product. We're a premium product. And it can get some, you know, casual fans heading into 2019.
Yeah.
But, we'll see what happens with that, because they've had that opportunity before and it just has not happened.
I mean, for Bellator, you've got the two events this week. You've got 202 and 203. Canadian Julia Budd defending her title there on Friday. Former guest of the show. You've got Gerald Harris fighting on the undercard, if you can believe that, against a guy who's undefeated.
Another friend of the show.
Yeah, 24 years old and 19-0. So, I mean, it's a stack card there Friday night. It's one you don't want to sleep on.
Why put the two cards together?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Why? It makes no sense.
If we're on that, the Bellator website only announced three fights, you know, as of, I'd say, like 2 weeks ago, and for 203. And now for 203, there's, I believe, six or seven fights on the card. Plus,
so that would lead you to believe that they were scrambling.
Plus, so they're marketing it.
Cards together like that.
Well, they're marketing it as a Bellator MMA and a Bellator kickboxing event to the Italian fans. So I'm not sure if there's some sort of kickboxing connection there, but they're
doing kickboxing, but I don't know if they're going to mix the MMA fights in. And
they're not one and the same.
So I guess we better find out.
Yeah,
but, you know, this is to put two cards next to each other. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's get into it. So the UFC put two cards together. They were different, but they had two cards in two nights. And, you know, we already talked quite a bit about the main event.
Tradition.
Yeah,
that's tradition.
Exactly.
Every year for international.
Exactly.
Fighting. So come on, it's not the same.
So we talked at length about Israel Adesanya, Brad Tavares. It was a great win for Adesanya. You know, you had two Ultimate Fighter finale winners. You had Mike Trezano, and he beat Joe Giannetti. And then you also had the Canadian, Brad Katona, getting his win. And I mean, he put on a
Canadian from Winnipeg, who's developing an Irish accent too. That Brad Katona is a dangerous young man
for sure.
Very talented guy.
So my question to you is, and they talked about it a little bit before the fight, do we see him drop down to bantamweight in the UFC?
You know, I think he might, just because he is so much, he's shorter, obviously,
yeah,
than a lot of guys, it seems like. But He also, when you're shorter, you sacrifice a lot of reach.
Yeah.
And in these lower divisions, speed is such a factor that if you don't have, you know, the height and the reach to close the distance and, you know, dance in and out of the pocket, like guys like Cruz, Dillashaw, and Garbrandt do so effectively. They dance in and out of the pocket. These combinations are lightning quick because they close the distance so fast and then they're back to safety. Katona doesn't have really the ability to do that because of his physical size. So, you know, I think no matter what lighter division, when I say lighter division, I mean like lightweight down.
Yeah.
All of those guys from lightweight, featherweight, bantamweight, flyweights, they're all so depending so much on speed and punching accuracy. So I think Katona moving down would actually help him just because he'll be, you know, they'll have more of opportunities to fight guys who are similar in his size. His height is going to be an issue regardless, but not significantly. He's so talented on the ground. He is such a good learner, such a hard worker. He seems to be unbelievably disciplined as well. Obviously, this is a guy who uprooted his entire life,
yeah,
left Winnipeg, moved to Ireland, simply to train with SBG, and he has clearly made the most of it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And knowing that he's at SBG, they're going to continue to evolve his game. He's not going to be one of these stagnant guys, you know, like, and it's like Luis Peña might have came out, Katona and Luis Peña probably came out of the whole week as the biggest top 27 stars.
Yep.
Even though Peña wasn't fighting in the finale, whatever, you know, didn't matter. Peña and Katona have bright futures because they look capable of constantly changing and evolving and adapting. Tyler Diamond, I was disappointed with his performance, not only in the semifinal, but also in the on top. And I think, you know, obviously Cormier and them are very, very disappointed in his performance considering the praise they gave him. Bryce Mitchell, I think, could be a monster in the UFC once he gains a little of experience. He is another kid who just, you know, he chews metal. And he is no joke, this kid. He works so hard, and he's got that interesting Arkansas background. I think he's from Arkansas. And so he's got fan appeal, social media appeal, that I think will really, really, really resonate moving forward. So I think we did identify some prospects and some future stars coming out of Tough that we haven't really seen. In Tough 26, we saw it, I think, with Mata Ferry and some other people, some other girls coming out there. We got some great, great talent coming out of there. But lately, Tough hasn't produced the type talent, in my opinion, that we've seen in Tough 27. So I think, yeah, this was actually one of the better Tough finales we've ever had.
For sure. I mean, Brad Katona comes across as one of the most genuine guys I think I've ever seen in the UFC, period. Like, he's so happy to be there.
Just with your newborn kid, like, you wouldn't, like, you know, like, this guy's,
Yeah, he's the real deal, and to uproot everything and move to SBG, I mean, SBG is obviously one of the premier destinations for MMA fighters in the entire world. And one of the things that kind of, you know, overshadows them just a little bit is that, you know, some of their fighters have developed a bit of a reputation as being a little brash and, you know, a little, you know, they show off a little bit. But
I don't think he's in danger of that at any time soon, eh?
I don't either. I mean, he, like I said, one of the most genuine guys. Like, you can definitely tell his idol's Conor McGregor. Like, he went there due to Conor McGregor. And, you know, we've seen these great things from him already. So I think, yeah, maybe a move down to 135 might be on the horizon. Like you said, another one of the biggest stars to come out of this was Luis Peña. Like, another...
And just quickly, I just want to say that we've seen a lot of tough contestants compete in Tough at a certain weight and then find success in a different weight class.
Yeah, Rashad Evans.
Than the tough weight they competed at. So it wouldn't be unprecedented.
Yep, for sure. Like, Luis Peña, I mean, like, the guy, you know, we're one, whatever, and wanting to come out with a world flag. Like, the guy's definitely got the right mindset. Another genuine guy, like, I think I saw him on Twitter. It was either today or yesterday. Couldn't believe all the hype and all the people messaging him and just couldn't believe it. So great for him. Mota Ferry, like you said, great to see her back in the win column. Like,
I'm a big fan of Roxy Mota Ferry. She is not only an intelligent, you know, human being and someone who is a student of the game, like, she defines student of MMA. She is a mixed martial artist. But, you know, she had hit some low points working her way through the minors, including five fight losing.
Most
people. And this wasn't at, like, no level. I mean, she was at a, you know, fighting in the upper minor leagues of MMA, as I call them. And most people, when they, you know, go through a five-fight losing streak as a pro, that's it.
Yeah.
Their ship is sunk. And she, no, didn't care. She hooked up with Syndicate MMA, I believe it is. And they have done such good work with her, but she's also absorbed it, applied the information on Tough. We saw how dangerous she is on the ground. The girls in that division, the women in that division definitely respect her. They had a respect for her on the show. They have a respect for her now. And it was great to see, you know, after losing to Nico Montano in the title fight, that she had a chance, that she came back and earned revenge over Barb Honjak. That's a big win for her. I think it was, what, 7 years?
Honjak
defeated Monteferri.
Yeah.
And so she kind of came away with more than just her first UFC win. And that's the other thing. She debuted in the UFC, I think, way back in 2013, yep, in a one-off type of fight. She lost, I believe, to Raquel Pennington.
Obviously,
we know Raquel Pennington is a very, very tough fighter. But to see her come back and do all that stuff and be so resilient and get a win over an old rival is such, I think it's not only great for her, but it's great for the division. She should be a role model to a lot of young women coming up. She's the right kind of fighter. She's done it the right way. And she's got all the heart in the world. She kind of reminds me a little bit of Clay Guida, but also obviously a lot calmer.
Yeah.
She doesn't have the, you know, high octane energy that Guida has. But she's like, it's almost like she approaches things like a chess match. You know,
yeah.
She's a definite tactician. And you know what I love about her? She doesn't panic in bad spots. When she is so comfortable in the heat. You know, when stuff gets bad, I mean, she operates. And she is, in my opinion, one of the most underrated women in all of MMA. But to see her get that win, I really hope that she starts getting the attention she deserves.
Yeah, I mean, she really raised her stock again in that flyweight division, and I harped on it, and Tonya Evinger and I kind of talked about it a little bit, but it's great to see that the UFC is starting to spend a lot more time in the 125 division. It would be nice if they spent that much time with the featherweight division.
In the women's featherweight division, exactly.
It looks like we'll get to see that with this season of The Ultimate Fighter. I actually saw a snippet. I can't remember what website it was. It was Women's MMA Rankings, some website like that, but it's looking like we're going to see Pani Kanzad. We're going to see Katharina Lehner was another one of the names. There are a lot of really good names that you might recognize from Invicta if you pay attention there.
I would like to see if they're going to do that season. I'd like to see Cyborg.
Yeah.
And Holly Holm coaching against each other.
Yeah.
And Holly, and then fighting in a rematch at the end of it.
Yeah.
Because we all knew that the only way to get fill these divisions up, they proved it with the women's flyweight division, the women's strawweight division, and it's always been, okay, look, let's fill this division with a season of Tough.
Yeah.
Yet they lagged on this 145 division for years, just expecting it to magically fill up, and now here we are back to where we knew we were going to be as soon as they created it. Without a season of Tough, you cannot create a division unless you're going to sign 20 people at once.
Yeah, so one of the things that Tonya Evinger said before we started talking on the podcast was the fact that with her contract to fight Cyborg, it was on late notice. It was 3 weeks notice, and then she had a two-week training camp. They told her personally that they're just signing, you know, women to fight Cyborg, and that's it. They have no intention of creating a division. So finally, we're able to start stocking up on talent. It's most likely going to be an Invicta rich division for sure.
That's fine. Invicta is
exactly
a product with a lot of very talented people. Megan Anderson has a future. Megan Anderson has a future because Cyborg's not gonna be around forever.
Nope.
Neither is Holly Holm. They're both in their mid-30s. Not that they're, you know, they could fight for years to come. But I think Megan Anderson, man, she's got such a future, and I don't want people to discount her from the Holly Holm fight. That was her first test in some very deep waters.
And it was her first fight in a long time.
Yeah, and if anything, it shows how talented Holly Holm really is.
Yep.
You know what I mean? She was smaller, kind of like the DC Miocic fights, that Holm-Megan Anderson fight, you know, and it's just kind of reminded me, in terms of size difference anyways, you so rarely see, if ever, Holly Holm outsized by anybody in terms of height and reach. And it was such a big win for Holly Holm. But Megan Anderson has, I really believe, a really bright future. And if the UFC is going to do this with this division, Megan Anderson has to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, she has to. And to not include her, but I don't think there's anything wrong at all with signing tons of Invicta. You know, that's quality product. Also, just like it is with the featherweights and lightweights in the men's group, in the men's divisions, it seems to be the women's bantamweight and the women's featherweights are almost interchangeable, some of them.
Yeah.
You know, like there's some like who will fight in both, obviously, Holly Holm. But I think I think one day we will see Amanda Nunes. I hope she fights Cyborg, because to me, Cyborg Nunes is the biggest fight to make in all of female mixed martial arts right now, all of it.
Yep.
And if we don't make that fight, we're just ignoring the obvious. But yeah, they need to make that season happen, and they get just it's long overdue. Women's featherweight division is long overdue.
For sure. Well, Ty, that just about does us for this episode. It was great having you back on. What do you have for articles coming out here soon, if you can divulge?
Actually, I'm just finishing up something on Paulo Costa, centering around his post-fight comments and what might be next for him. I'm putting together an article on my feelings about the DC Lesnar and the entire heavyweight division, what might be next for Miocic, why I think this is a bad idea, and things like that. I'm also going to write a feature I'm planning to write for the Fight Network, I believe, this week on Miocic, you know, on his own away from the rest of this kind of heavyweight nonsense that's going on right now, you know, why he remains the most significant heavyweight in all of the sport. And as usual, I'll be picking up stuff on the fly. And you can check those out at fightnetwork.com or on my Twitter at AboveTheFoldTy. And you can check me out on Facebook and obviously at fansided/SportsIllustratedMMA.
Awesome, Ty. Thanks so much for coming on again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Well, it was great having Ty O'Keefe back on the podcast. I mean, he's a wealth of knowledge on all things MMA. And like I said, yeah, we'll have to bring him back again soon. It was great going over 226 as well as the Ultimate Fighter season 27 finale. And, you know, later on this week, we're going to cover Bellator 202, Bellator 203, as well the UFC Boise card. And tonight, don't forget, you've got Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series coming at you. One of the marquee matchups, I think it's the main event, is Kevin Aguilar. He's in that, and he's LFA's featherweight champion. Fighting at lightweight, seemed to be a little bit of a short notice there. I noticed Nolan King reporting that. And if you're interested in getting some breakdowns, more analysis on that, there's actually a really good article on Fansided by Keith Shillian, and the title of that one is Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series Week 4 In-Depth Preview and Prediction. So check out Keith's article there on Fansided, and we'll see you again later on this week when we have a few more guests on and we'll break down the fight. So see you again on Friday.